This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to discuss a new pilot on the corporate broadcasting Columbia broadcasting system,
yes.
Or whatever it's called, SWAT.
Yes,
which I'm not even going to try to figure out what that stands for because honestly, I don't know.
I used to know. I think the S is for strategic. I think W is for weapons, strategic weapons and tactical. I think.
Oh, there you go.
Something like that.
Okay.
I think.
Yes. So the new show SWAT with the pilot directed by Star Trek Beyond's Justin Lin. So before we get into that, I just want to touch on Discovery again. Discovery, you know, it's in its break now. You know, episode 9 has aired and it had, you know, cliffhanger and all that good stuff. But there's something which stood out to me about episode 9, and that is the direction. I don't know. Okay, this episode was directed by a guy named Chris Byrne, who, as far as I can tell, this is the very first thing that he directed, like, you know, directed. He was a second unit director on a number of television shows, including Hannibal, 12 Monkeys, and American Gods. But he had never, you know, he had never sat in the big chair himself, you know what I mean? You know?
Yeah. Right.
Until now. And he's got a couple of other shows which he's about to direct, or maybe he's directed them and they're just not out yet, one of which is 12 Monkeys, and the other of which is American Gods. And with American Gods, he's listed for season 2 as the supervising director. Now, that's kind of seems unusual. You know, someone who has never directed an episode of television becoming the supervising director on a show, a high profile, like cinematic show like American Gods. But obviously with Hannibal and American Gods, he's worked with, you know, Brian Fuller and company for a long time. And obviously they know him well and know his work well. And if this episode of Disco is any indication, they made a good choice because
they did. They did.
I mean,
I you know, the thing that jumps out at me, and that you pointed out the Hannibal connection, is the way that a lot of the shots in this were framed does remind me of the way a lot of shots in Hannibal were framed, in that the camera seemed more intimate with the characters. The camera gave the characters more opportunity for subtler facial expressions to play across. And I point specifically at, and I'm still juggling the character names, so please forgive me, but when the doctor learns that Stamets has been hiding the truth of his condition from him, the camera gives him a moment of reaction that is very, you feel a lot closer to that character than in some of the earlier episodes, a lot of the earlier episodes of this season of Discovery. It really seemed so focused, even though the stakes are so huge in this episode, everything seems so focused on the individuals and their reactions to the situations. That's what jumped out at me.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And I think the other thing about that, which is interesting, is how, you know, those moments seem to be very well designed from the ground up to portray these characters or whatever. I mean, you know, you go back to the days of Next Generation, and I think we've talked about this probably multiple times, you know, the over two-shot formula or whatever, two close-ups and a master, and how, like, you know, this is something that they teach in schools, you know, in terms of, like, shooting coverage, because it is so by the book that, you know, you really can use it as sort of, like, a tool for like, basic film grammar and stuff like that. But with, you know, modern television and whatnot, they're trying to maybe break out of that standard mold and do something a little more. And I think this episode does that more than any other episode of Discovery so far. And that is something that I find really interesting, like the way that these shots are designed and also the way that they are designed to interact with each other. The way that they are cut together seems like it's so well thought out, you know, like there's a clear you know, narrative structure going on here, you know, where one shot leads to the next, and you know, it's they build on top of each other to tell a story. And I know that sounds, you know, basic, you know, like, of course, but doesn't every, you know, show or movie do that? Yeah. And yeah, it does to some extent. But I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I really feel like this is, like, very well thought out and designed and perfect. And I don't know. Yeah, I was really, really, really impressed by it. I'm going to say, because I can't think of anything, honestly, off the top of my head, excluding the movies, I think that this may be, like, the single best directed episode of Star Trek in history.
I don't have any way to dispute that, because I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of everything. But what I can tell you is that I'm on board with your assessment of it. And I think to pile on to what you're saying is, even though there's a much more intimate treatment of the way a lot of this is shot, there's never a loss of, and it, I guess this speaks to your point about staging and building it up, there's never a loss of spatial relationship.
Yeah.
A lot of times with television, when you have close up after close up, like if it flies by, you're kind of like, wait, where are they standing? It's all completely clear. There's never any confusion about where anybody is in relation to anybody else. And I think that in and of itself is really brilliant, because he doesn't rely on the anchor of a second person in that scene to get you there.
Yeah.
It's just clearly communicated.
And I know the deck is kind of stacked in Discovery's favor in terms of, you know, like, superior direction, because obviously, you know, these days, you know, there's this desire to make television much more cinematic than there was back in the day. And, you know, the people who were making Next Generation just did not have sort of like the resources at their disposal that you know, the people making Discovery do. So, you know, okay, whatever. But so, all that being said, I mean, I think it's kind of undisputable that Discovery has the best production value of every Star Trek show, of any Star Trek show. And yes. I think it has the best direction of any Star Trek show. And I think this is the best directed episode of Discovery. So, you know, logic would suggest that, yes.
Yeah.
This
logic
is the best
clearly
direct.
Dictates.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And maybe I'm overstating things. Maybe I'm just caught up in the whatever. I mean, I absolutely loved Into the Forest I Go, I think is the name of the episode. I thought it was the best episode of Star Trek since What You Leave Behind, to be honest. But whatever, regardless of any of that, the director's name is Chris Byrne. You know, you American Gods fans are going to be in for a treat, I think, with him, you know, as the in-house director next season. And I just feel like this is one of those guys who is going to sort of, like, break. Well, I mean, TV is, you know, on the same level as movies these days. I was going to say, like, break out of TV and become, like, a, you know, an auteur or something like that. But maybe he's going to want to stay in TV and just do his thing.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, whether it's in TV or whether it's in movies, like, this guy, I really, really feel like is going to become someone who is known in the future, known really well. I mean, I'm definitely going to keep an eye on him, and I'm super excited to see whatever he does. So, yeah, good job, Chris Byrne, I guess.
Yeah. Congratulations from Stage 9.
There you go.
Did a heck of a job.
Yeah. So anyway, enough about Star Trek Discovery. Let's talk about another show directed by another guy who has made some movies in the past. That guy's name is Justin Lin, and that show's name is SWAT.
Yeah.
Okay, now SWAT was a TV show in the 70s. And
with one of the greatest theme songs of all time. Yes.
Yeah, yes, yes, it was. Yes, yeah. Which you get a taste of at the end of this episode. And in the early aughts, it became a movie, which was really, really bad.
Yes, that is an accurate description. Yeah. I never finished it, actually. It was so bad. I got 20 minutes in and I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this.
I went to a trade screening of it because I'm like, this looks cool. And I watched it, woke up super early in the morning, like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning to go see this thing. And I have regretted it ever since. But
yeah.
Did you know, fun fact, Zack Snyder was originally supposed to direct SWAT. It was going to be his first movie. And he wanted to make it R-rated, and the studio said, no, it has to be PG-13. And he said, okay, then I'm not going to do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, now I'm sitting there in my brain. The possibilities of that are kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
But SWAT, you know, much like Star Trek, belongs on the small screen. I don't know if that's true. I've never seen the original. You know, I don't remember the first one at all, to be honest. So, whatever. Let's just assume.
Yeah.
SWAT, it's fair. Much like Star Trek, belongs on the small screen. And here it is on CBS, directed by Justin Lin. Yeah. You want to give sort of a plot synopsis of this or the premise or whatever?
Yeah, I sure do. All right. We pick up with the SWAT team. And we find out that they are the baddest of the bad, tremendous skill set. Unfortunately, something goes awry during their mission, and an innocent person is gravely injured during that. And as a result, the command of the team is handed down to a rising star who sees this as his opportunity to put his own stamp on things and police things the right way, where instead of going in and pushing people to the pavement and kicking down doors, becoming old school with it and becoming more of a family member in the neighborhood interested in helping, because this new commander of the SWAT squad is somebody who grew up on these streets where police are not as trusted or loved as they would like to be. And you got some interesting motivations, and you have a plot driven by somebody who is looking to inflame race relations to a bad place, as a cover for what they really want to achieve.
Yeah, I find it really interesting, sort of like the history of SWAT, the idea that it is so popular because you look at it and it was only on for like a year, and yet it's something which everyone knows about, it inspired a movie like 30 years later. Like what's the deal there? And I mean, I guess the premise on the whole is solid, but it just seems so strange that it would do that, I don't know. Does that make any sense?
It does, but the thing is, I could throw at you Battlestar Galactica was, because nobody should ever count Galactica 1980 because that's beneath notice. But the original Battlestar Galactica had a season, but it is ingrained in my brain, whether through reruns or first viewings as a kid. Seeing that show created an impression enough that they brought it back for, the revival series, the reboot. But this is sort of the similar territory where it's like, this is a premise everybody loved, and they, that theme music is amazing. Yeah. So why not bring it back?
Yeah, no, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. But, you know, the fact that it did inspire that and now it is back. And it's not just, I mean, I know that this is CBS's thing. I know that they like taking old shows and, you know, repurposing them. We saw it, you know, with Hawaii Five-0. We saw it with, you know, MacGyver. They're working on a Magnum PI. You know, I mean, this seems to be their new thing. And it seems to be really successful and effective for them. So it kind of makes sense that they would sort of like revisit this stuff. But like you look at the people involved with the new show and it's pretty crazy. I mean, you get Justin Lin to direct it. That's, you know, super high profile. But then you look at like the two guys who created it. It's Aaron Rasan Thomas and Sean Ryan. Now, Aaron Rasan Thomas, you know, he did the Get Down, which is that Baz Luhrmann show that was on Netflix, right? And he also did like Southland and CSI New York and everything. And then Sean Ryan, I mean, he created The Shield,
which
right?
is one of the greatest television shows in the history of anything. See, yes.
I need to see it. I've never seen it, but
oh, know. Dude.
Yeah.
Dude, and one of the guys here in SWAT actually is Lem from The Shield, whose character arc in The Shield is anybody who hasn't seen The Shield, he's also the poor chap that goes with Tracy Lords to the club at the beginning of Blade, starring Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
It was a great scene, yeah.
It was.
He was great in The Shield. Like every time I see him, like I can't. It's unfortunate because he's a good actor, but every time I see him, I loved The Shield and his character in The Shield so much that I'm like, hey, it's Lem. Lem's getting another chance. It's like it's so unfair to that guy, but it's just, you know, it's the way that it is.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, to get this sort of like pedigree, you know, to all be involved in this, you know, remake of a 70s show that lasted for one season, you know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. And I mean, I don't know what the original SWAT was like. Did you see it or not?
If I saw it, it was during reruns. Mm-hmm. You know, because I would have been, I don't know how old when it was first on the air. It's not. I wasn't their target demographic.
No.
I was watching Sesame Street probably, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, the theme song, I know I keep hitting on the theme song, but, like, that's the entry point for it, and you would see it on reruns, and it just created a positive, you know, impression and everything like that. But, I mean, you know, it's a straightforward, I mean, you know, you talk about, you know, like, CBS likes to bring stuff back, but even more in their wheelhouse is cop procedurals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this is right in there with Hawaii Five-0 and NCIS and NCIS Los Angeles and NCIS the Bayou and NCIS University Campus or however many NCISs are out there and CSI and stuff like that. This is right in there. Like those shows are starting to lose some steam. They bring in SWAT and they got that new show with David Boreanaz's SEAL team.
Mm-hmm.
So this is literally right in CBS's wheelhouse, but you're mentioning all of these high-powered hitters playing on it, and we talked about Discovery earlier. And of course, you know, people have, you know, groaned unfairly or not about having to pay for Discovery. Oh, I got to pay to see Star Trek Discovery. And here they are; they're bringing in Justin Lin for this, and this is just broadcast for them.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, Lin is—he had a hand in Scorpion as well.
Yeah, he did the pilot for that. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, and Sean Ryan and all that. So they've brought in some heavy hitters, and this is just for broadcast, so I can't help but wonder, is Star Trek Discovery sort of helping SWAT make it to the air, too? Well, if so, I'm kind of on board. That's all right.
I don't know. I think, like you're saying, this is their wheelhouse, and I mean, you look at, like, you know, the success of CBS and everything, and, you know, people who tune into all those other shows are going to tune into this, too, whereas Star Trek is sort of outside of that, you know, thing.
All of that stuff aside, what I think is interesting is SWAT is enough nostalgia driven that as the audience that is a little bit young for their, what seems to be CBS's target demographic in a lot of ways, they're starting to get a little bit older. And so stuff like SWAT and Hawaii Five-0, that tickles their nostalgia bone as they start to be, you know, maybe watching a little more TV, going out a little less, those sorts of things that, you know, this is an easy sort of net for them to cast. And I mean, you know, I think Lynn's direction on this was it was a 1 hour movie. Like, yeah. I felt like I was watching like a big budget film when I was watching this, and I was sold. I was like, wow, if every episode is going to deliver these type of camera moves and these types of chases and action, yeah, I might watch it every, you know, not religiously every week, but I might catch this every so often. Sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, the direction was awesome. You know, the photography was awesome too, you know, really sort of embracing that digital look or whatever. It's mm-hmm. so clean, you know, and everything. It was great. And I mean, the thing that really kind of stood out to me was, you know, I mean, cop shows, you know, like we're saying, they're a dime a dozen and everything like that. And I think a lot of them have a tendency to be rather simplistic in their mm-hmm. storytelling and everything. And with this, you know, I mean, I think that it's really interesting because right now there is, you know, sort of like a thing in the culture where when we think about, you know, police and their interaction with, you know, the public, it's very contentious, right? I mean, mm-hmm. there's obviously a lot of stuff going on in terms of, you know, race relations and everything like that. And instead of just kind of like ignoring that completely, you know, which you could do on a cop show very easily, since, you know, that's obviously not, you know, what the majority of interaction between police and the community is like, they decided to like embrace it head on. And yeah. and not in a simplistic way by any stretch of the imagination, right? I mean, they're dealing with some really, you know, complex issues in a very complex way. And I think that that's really cool. You know, I mean, the idea of, I mean, because obviously, you know, it's really become sort of like an us versus them, you know, sort of mentality yeah. for a lot of people. And I think, you know, what this show seems to be trying to do, at least in this pilot, is to basically show both sides of the issue and not really, you know, boil it down to something simplistic in any sense of the word.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that's really interesting because, you know, the project which Lynn seems to really be excited about, which he's been trying to get made for years or has been, you know, working on for years or whatever, is this little movie about the LA riots. And, yeah. You know, seeing this, seeing the way that he basically tackles that subject matter in a CBS procedural really, really makes me excited to see how he's going to tackle it in an indie drama where he doesn't have to, you know, tailor it to, you know, network television. You know what yeah. I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because it's my friendship with you and doing this show that has even opened my eyes to the immense talent of Justin Lin and makes me watch SWAT and look for those cues and say, oh, that's a Justin Lin shot. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. The way that the love he gives to that car, and I'm like, that's the director of the Fast and Furious. Yeah, yeah. And they Tokyo Drift in this.
Yes,
they Tokyo Drifted.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, all right, it's there. Like, this guy can direct a car chase, man. Come mm-hmm. on.
Yeah, he's got some motorcycle chase stuff going. I mean, that uh-huh. stuff with the motorcycle where the guy's just trying to get to work, whatever. And, yeah. you know, I mean, like we're seeing in all the Fast and Furious movies, it really is about a sense of community, a sense of family and everything like that. And,
yeah.
you know, that's definitely present in this. I mean, it's sort of like the backbone of this show. Yeah. You know, the idea of like this cop who's thrown into this very politicized situation, you know, for, you know, kind of stupid reasons. And now yeah. he's got to like deal with this situation. And instead of like playing ball with, you know, what his superiors want him to do, he's, you know, taking his newfound, you know, status and spinning it in order to, you know, benefit the people in that community and stuff like that, you know, and still accomplish, you know, the job which he has, you know, which he's set out to do. So, I mean, that's pretty cool, like the way that they're doing this. So, I don't know. I mean, like you're saying, yeah, first and foremost, it is an action show, and the action is top-notch, right? But yeah. There's a lot of, like, interesting, you know, layers to it, you know, beneath the surface. And I think the performances are really good and everything. It's got Shamar Moore as the lead, and he's
big
really
fan
cool.
Of him.
Yeah, you know, good supporting cast, you know, all that stuff. I also like, you know, and I think this kind of goes into the sort of, like, CBS model. Like, unlike, you know, Discovery, I feel like this is going to be kind of like the, you know, cop story of the week, you know, sort of thing.
Oh yeah, sure. So, absolutely.
I mean, I definitely prefer the long form storytelling that we find in other things like Discovery, and I'm guessing probably The Shield, but there is something to be said, especially when we're only watching one episode here, for a story which does have a beginning, a middle, and an end. I mean, it really does feel like that sort of like classic cop show where it's like, we're gonna, you know, have an adventure, and if you miss next week's episode, not that big of a deal, you can tune into episode 3, you know, that sort of thing.
You know, every so often it's okay to just go to McDonald's for lunch. It really is.
Yeah.
It's, and there's no shame in that. It's like, you know what, this is fine, this is good.
Yeah, it is. And you know, everyone who's listening to this is probably signed up for CBS All Access anyway in order to watch Discovery. So as long as you're there, you got, you know, 8 weeks until the thing comes back, you know, watch some SWAT. Why not?
And if you, by chance, are not signed up for All Access, it is on your cable's on-demand feature as well. So,
and if you don't have cable, you know, get out those rabbit ears. Which, by the way, do work with your HD, what have yous, just maybe not as well, but it's all the
same. Don't they have the aren't they like $30 antennas now or something like that?
Yeah, you can get a $30 antenna. I've got mine. It's called the Leaf, I think. It's pretty high quality. I just plug it. It's like a big flat thing. You just stick to your wall and you're good to go. But you can use the old ones too. They work.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah.
But right now I'm just trying to talk the missus into getting just the HD broadcast thing, because she watches the reality shows.
Yeah,
I'm like, we don't need cable for that.
You can literally go to Amazon and get one which works perfectly fine for like $20.
Yeah. I'm gonna get my friends to start a letter writing campaign for this, because I have
to
not
your
been
wife.
Able to convince her. Yes. Yes.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about SWAT today, but that's not all we're talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Fan consensus has sort of said, look, third season is terrible and awful and woeful, and a lot of it is. But you go back and you watch it, and there's a lot of it that carries over. Like, there's a lot of stuff that is, I think of, like, as quintessentially Star Trek. That sort of you see develop over the course of the third season.
The 602 Club.
There was a lot of screaming involved. I'll start with... You know what I'm talking about.
Snowball! Snowball! Snowball!
Yes. No, I know what you mean.
No,
I did
a lot
too.
Of... Oh my god! It's a Demogorgon!
Warp 5.
He had to learn to not interfere, and it's painful, and that's what makes it such a powerful episode. So this is definitely a see it.
Okay, next.
All right. All right. Sleeping dogs. While exploring a
skip
gas...
Skip it.
Okay. All right, so shout out to... I think we already know what this one is.
keep going with the sleeping dogs.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
It's like when Tyler was, you know, explaining the situation and seeing it, and I mean, and he was explaining it to Tyler, it's like he was almost apologizing for it. Like, I had to do this to save my life, and I'm still alive because I did this. But is he suffering guilt for that?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts on the iPhone or iPad or Apple TV or on the desktop iTunes app. to get all the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and in most third-party apps. And you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place is to join the larger conversation in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose to send to a show and select Stage 9. That'll come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trek.fm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trek.fm. John, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me as Kessel Junkie out there on Twitter and the other social media networks. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. You can find me co-hosting over on the Nerd Party Network, Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing, and Great Shot Kid with you.
Yeah, you can find me over there on Great Shot Kid on the Nerd Party. And you can also find me on my website, CommentaryTrackStars.com, doing a show called Commentary Track Stars. Just finally starting to get back into that. Check out our Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, Ultimate Cut commentary. It's only...
Oh, I can't wait.
It's only 3 hours and 2 minutes long.
Well, okay, I have to wait because of the amount of time required, but I can't wait.
You can also find me right here on the network doing The Edge, which is our Star Trek Discovery show. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. We'd like to thank our associate producers today, Chris Steftenagel, Jeff Sutter, and Norman C. Lau.
Thank you.
If you'd like to be like Chris, Jeff, and Norm, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. All right. So, you know, I mean, Justin Lin, you know, he was the guy, you know, last year with Star Trek mm-hmm. Beyond and everything. Now this year we've got Chris Byrne directing, you know, Discovery and stuff, you know, fresh off the heels of you know, Hannibal and American mm-hmm. Gods coming to the Star Trek universe and blowing our minds. And you know, when we come back from this hiatus, you know, we're gonna return to an old favorite with Jonathan Frakes, I believe, directing the very first episode of Chapter 2. So yeah, cool directors all around. It's been fun, but until next time,
keep that spore drive running.
There you go.